United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Alley podcast, where we're kind of of the Yankees right now, but there are a lot of other exciting things going on. There's Old-Timers Day this weekend. Obviously, the World Cup in soccer is going on. So there are some things outside of baseball to be enthusiastic about. But we still love baseball, of course. The Yankees didn't do too well against the Orioles and Blue Jays, but so it goes. I'm Andrew Mearns, here with Matt Provenzano and Matt Ferencik. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Pretty good?
Yeah.
Other than Yankees kind of forgetting that they were on a hot streak.
And forgetting how to hit baseball. If it wasn't for the Carlos Beltran home run, it would have been pretty bad.
Yeah, and they weren't really hitting before the Beltran home run either. I was at the game, and that kind of just bailed them out.
Because then they would have lost 5 in a row. They would have been swept by the Orioles.
Yeah.
And they would have lost 2 out of 3 against the Blue Jays. Then they were pretty close to losing really all 3. They didn't really play that inspiring at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, forgettable.
Yeah, and I read that was actually the biggest hit, win probability added-wise, since 2008.
Yeah, Jason Giambi's pinch hit 2-run home run against the Blue Jays.
That's right.
So BJ Ryan.
That was a pretty big hit, and it feels like a long time that the Yankees have done something like that. I kind of feel like, I mean, it's partially because they're not hitting, and partially it just has to do with the low-scoring run environment, but like a 2 or 3 run deficit kind of feels like a 5 to 7 run deficit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that three-run home run felt like it was a 5-run home run.
Yep.
And like I said, it speaks to just they're not hitting well, but it's also the whole league is kind of not hitting as well, so.
Yeah, they're only 29 or 30 players that are at double-digit homers in the American League, and that's, not much at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you even go back as recently, I think it was, when the Yankees were hitting home runs, in 2009, I think, half the team had 30 home runs.
Yeah, I know a bunch of them had 20 homers. That was the same year the Phillies had, 5 30-homer hitters or something like that. But, yeah.
That's just a good year.
2009 was a good year. They should do that again.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That's an analysis.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is, but there's always, I consider myself to be pretty optimistic as a fan, but every year there's one series where I'm just I get fed up with this team, and I think that Orioles series was it. Nothing for 3 games.
Yeah, the first 2 games against Toronto, let's say Germany. The first two... First 2 games against Toronto were terrible. And it was just oh wow, all the nice momentum from the previous week, and they swept the Blue Jays and won that in the dramatic Beltran game, just sapped away, and now it just looked like they were free falling toward 500, and maybe they still are.
Well, it's funny because this is, I think that this is an experience that's pretty common amongst most teams in the league right now. I mean, if you're not terrible, like the Padres or, the Diamondbacks or something, or the Rays, you're pretty much just doing what the Yankees are doing now. You have a week where you feel like you're tanking, then you have a week where you feel like you're going to break out, and then it goes back and forth. I mean, look at the Red Sox. They lost 10 in a row, and then they won 7 in a row, and then they lost 5 in a row. So I feel like this is kind of just a common theme amongst the mediocrity of the league. So it's a pretty common experience right now.
Yeah, the baseball right now is the A's and everyone else.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a wise sage. Wise sage said, "You can't predict baseball, Susan."
A great mind of our time.
Well, I think what's interesting about this whole stretch the Yankees have been on is that their run differential is horrendous.
Oh
yet
yeah.
Yet they're still
it's
above
really
500. I think it's -34.
Something like that.
So. Someone really posed the question, where does this come from? The Yankees have had this experience where they're outplaying their run differential, and is this just a coincidence? Some people would say, yes, it's just going to eventually regress to the mean. But some people would say, no, it's something else. Like, because run differential is kind of crude. Maybe it's the pen. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know.
It's the Vidal-Nuno factor.
Yep. Didn't they have it down to, like, minus six, like, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, when you get blown out, like, three times, that kind of does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, their rotation is so up and down these days, because, you know, you got Tanaka, who's just pretty much always up, and then you got your average starters, or average to good starters in, like, Kuroda, Phelps, and Whitley, and then you got Nuno, who kind of tosses up stinkers every time he shows up, and with some of the other pitchers occasionally throwing bad games, too, that's just going to inflate it. Doesn't help when they have to put, like, so when, like, Nuno blows up, then they have to put in their long relievers, like Huff or the Bruce Billings of the world to get beat up, and that just adds to the run differential problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people have talked about whether run differential, like, there's the argument that the run differential being kind of destroyed, like in a Vidal-Nuno game, is that really telling, or is it more of an outlier, or maybe teams that are bad get blown out more, which is pretty true. But yeah, you're right. The games where Tanaka's pitching, maybe they'll win 3-1 or 4-2. So they're not going to pad their run differential by a large amount. But if Vidal Nuno has a bad game, it's like now they lose 10-3.
Yeah.
So the games in which they lose where they have a bad pitcher is just by such a large margin, and the games in which they win with Tanaka is not 10-1. They maybe score 4 or 5 runs. But it would be nice if they had a couple of blowouts, because there are bad pitchers for other teams.
Yeah, they don't seem to do that often.
Yep.
Well, this weekend, they'll have the series against the Red Sox, and the aforementioned Nuno is starting the opener on Friday night against Brandon Workman. Then it's,
yay.
Then it's Tanaka Lester on Saturday and Lackey Whitley on Sunday. So, I feel like there will be a lot of runs scored in the Friday night game, because I don't think Workman is especially great either.
No.
He's better than Nuno, but that's not really saying much.
But I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees just, like, Workman just turned into John Lester.
Yeah.
Which the Yankees are wont to do with bad pitchers, make them look better than they actually are.
And then Lester turns into Workman, because sometimes they'll, like, actually have a good game against good pitching.
Yeah, he played pretty. I have to look at the exact numbers, but I think he played pretty well against John Lester.
Odds are they've been playing against him for like 7 years now, so
yeah,
pretty familiar. Even if like the players have been changing.
Well, hopefully they. I would hope they at least pick up the last two games, which is seven. Maybe asking too much, but the Red Sox are not really that good this year. Like, really, just not. This is a team that you want to. These are wins you want to bank.
Right.
You know, because they're going to be facing, I think they already had their easiest stretch of schedule, if I'm not mistaken. The next stretch of about 9 games, they're playing the Red Sox, the Rays, and the Twins, and these are 9 games that you want to win. You want to win, you know, ideally, you want to win 6 or 7 of these.
Yeah.
If you really want to compete, because you're not going to win 6 or 7 out of 9 against, you know, teams like the Blue Jays and the Orioles, it's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, and then after this Red Sox series, they'll face Archer and Price. And, well, I mean, those are some good pitchers, so maybe they'll do something.
They may not be facing Price.
Yeah, unless Price is traded before his next start.
He seems to think so. They seem to think so. He even had a quote where he said that his last home run for Vanderbilt, his last game for Vanderbilt, he allowed a home run. His last at bat. And his last at-bat for the Rays, he allowed a home run. And he made some comment about how, like, those were two weird ways to end two careers. And it almost seemed like he was, like, saying goodbye already.
Yeah.
So.
We'll see.
I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know what? I'm kind of hoping he's gone.
Yeah, I don't really want to face him anymore, so he can go.
I'm hoping he gets buried in the NL West somewhere and the Yankees never see him again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go to the Dodgers.
Oh, God, that. Dodgers. Because they don't have enough pitching already. Well, regardless, that'll be something to watch for. And hopefully he'll be gone before the Yankees face him, and hopefully the Yankees can do something against this just a stretch of bad teams here, or shaky teams with the Red Sox, Rays, and Twins, so we'll see. A piece of news that came out this week was that Brian Cashman is most likely to come back after the 2014 season. Now, I wrote about this a little bit the other day, and I think that I think it's a fine move. I mean, Cashman, for as much crap as he gets from some fans, he does a fine job, and I think the results kind of speak for themselves. The minor league system could be better, but that's not all under his jurisdiction entirely. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I think the common theme, and I think Sam Miller wrote an article for Baseball Prospectus about this, about how teams have their quote-unquote way, like the Cardinal way, and everyone keeps talking about why can't Cashman be more like John Mozeliak and have this, you know, amazing farm system with, you know, kind of just churning out players and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that as much as they are good and the Cardinals do have a good system, it's just as much luck as it is skill. And I mean, you could imagine an alternate reality where Phil Hughes maybe breaks the right way and Ian Kennedy stays with the Yankees and breaks the right way, and people are claiming that Cashman is this genius who pulled the greatest draft ever out of his hat. So I think that people give him not enough credit when he does something right, because people just say, well, he has the money, and then people sort of give him, you know, no leeway when things don't exactly break the right way.
Yeah, and even when he gets the occasional hits, it seems to just kind of be written off as like, oh, well, whatever.
Well, it's written off as that's what he's supposed to do, is, well, you have this much money, and this is your job, and that's what you're supposed to do, and, like, the expectation is just winning. And you can already see, like, how restless people are. Like, why aren't they on pace to win 95 games, and, you know, why aren't they doing as well, and, you know, Cashman should be fired, and... I think Cashman's well aware of what the team, where the team stands.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how there were conflicting criticisms from, like, this, from the most recent offseason and the previous offseason, when they, like, didn't sign anyone, and people were like, oh, why aren't the Yankees spending money? They should be improving the team. And then when they do make moves to improve the team, it's like, why would you sign these guys? You can't be you're wasting money.
Yeah, exactly. You should be... Yep. You know, my favorite criticism is building up the farm. Is, oh, they should be building up the farm system. I think that really no Yankee fan really understands what that means.
Right. It's such a wild card.
It's like going up to someone who's been unemployed for 2 years and saying, well, why don't you just go get a job? You know, and then you look at them like, are you crazy? Like, do you understand what that's like? And people don't understand how difficult that actually is, you know, regarding rebuilding. That
right.
You want to be like the Astros, you're going to have to play like the Astros first.
Mm-hmm. And they've, like, really torpedoed their fan base. I mean, I'm sure that the cable network problem doesn't help, but, I mean, they haven't put out a competitive... They haven't really put out a team that they actually hope will make the playoffs legitimately since, like, 2008 or something like that.
And even then is iffy. Yep. I think even in 2008 they were peddling that they were going to compete.
Yeah.
But I mean, they really thought that they were going to compete. They weren't a legitimate team for, you know, maybe, I'd say, 8 years almost. So if you want to have a strong farm system, I mean, you could look at teams who had the opportunity to draft high. I mean, you look at teams that had multiple draft, like the Rays had two number one draft picks in a row, and one of them happened to be Tim Beckham.
Yeah, and Tim Beckham's
so,
nothing.
Then you have one like Matt Bush. And...
Yeah, the Rays had high picks for, like, 10 years in a row, basically, and really they only had a few hits.
And the Pirates had high picks for 20 years in a row. And they had no hits. So
Brian Bullington!
Yeah, and then if you look at the Astros, and I think Andrew and I were talking about this on some thread, about how the Astros, a lot of their future does depend on these guys, like, panning out. And they're even fine. It's going to be difficult. There are going to be guys who are just not going to work out. Appel is, like, completely falling off the map already. I mean, he's not completely falling off yet, but
he had an ugly debut, I heard.
He had what?
He had an ugly debut to the season or something the other day, didn't he?
He's had quite a few. He had one outing where he allowed, like, 10 runs in, like, one inning.
Ooh, Bard-esque.
So, and every single scouting report I've read progressively has been saying that, you know, that he's completely, like, not the person that they thought he was going to be. So, you know, back to my point, even when you have the best possible position to build your farm system and you have the most high probability pick, you're still going to fail.
Right.
So when yep. the criticism is, why isn't the farm system better? I don't know. Like, that's like saying, why are you better at flipping coins, or why are you better at the lottery?
And it's not like they're not trying either, because, I mean, this effort to sign all these young international players and, like, blow past the spending limit is really encouraging, because they're aware that an international draft is probably coming soon, so they might as well overspend now and try to soak up as much talent in this pool as possible, kind of like what I think the Cubs and Rangers have done the past couple of years.
Yeah, exactly, and that's pretty much all they can do is just... It's basically... It's the original form of scouting. The original farm system was supposed to be exactly that. It was buy as much talent as you can. It was called the term was quality in quantity was the phrase. Mm-hmm. That was used by Branch Rickey had that phrase, because basically the Dodgers, the Cardinals, and the Yankees bought all of the minor league talent. And that was how they were able to build their farm system. So that's the only way that the Yankees are going to build talent, is just by buying all the international free agents. But it's yet to be seen whether or not that will actually work, or it could break however, you know, it could break in a number of ways. So,
yeah, for like every Robinson Cano, there are like 100 like anonymous players who never really amount to anything. You can just hope by buying big on these young players that maybe someday down the line they'll pan out, but.
Yeah, I just, it's very interesting that people believe that there is some superior way to build a team, that building free agent teams are dishonest, and building draft and develop teams are very honest, and the right way, it's almost like honest work is considered. But if you look at teams like the A's, the team is not built by the draft at all.
No, yeah, their thing does seem to be more like acquiring players from organizations who've been given up on, like the Brandon Mosses of the world.
The Brandon Mosses, the Josh Donaldson who was like converted, Jesse Chavez who's like turned into a pitcher.
The guy they bought from the Brewers for a dollar.
Yeah, exactly. So people talk about Billy Beane just has a brilliant way of going about doing it. He says, you know what? I'm not going to rely on the draft. It's actually too unreliable. It's actually pretty inefficient, because after the first round, people are just guessing.
And they do occasionally have guys that were from the draft. Like, I think Sonny Gray was from the draft, but it's not it's the same way, like, some people talk about the Yankees teams that won those championships in the late 90s and 2000s, where, you know, yes, they had, like, Bernie, Jeter, Posada, Pettit, Rivera, who came up from the farm system, but, you know, there was a whole lot of David Cohn, David Wells, Roger Clemens, Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez, guys from different organizations who were pulled in and not homegrown at all, really.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing is that the idea that, like, there's this Yankee exceptionalism that made them create this core, and, like, people don't realize it was like putting a penny slot in and getting $1 billion.
Paul O'Neill and the, like, are, quote, true Yankees.
Yeah. It's funny how that works out.
They may not be from the Yankees farm system, but they're true Yankees.
Well, Travis Ishikawa is a true Yankee. Wade LeBlanc is a true Yankee. So it's a lot of luck, and also most GMs have you have to credit Brian Cashman, because he's more progressive than most GMs. He's not saying that he doesn't know what a plate appearance is. He's not saying that he doesn't want to build an analytics department, because he does. He has pretty good they have good advanced scouting. Their international scouting is good. So, like, they do, they're a very rich team, so they're going to spend a lot of money on these toys and these new analytics and things like that. So to think that he's just sitting there, like, throwing darts on a board is kind of just ridiculous.
Yeah, and this isn't to, like, discredit what the Cardinals have done, because they're pretty great, and they clearly have a good idea of what they're doing, but it's just, it's so difficult. And even with the Cardinals, they'll miss on a ton of players, too.
But the thing is, what's interesting is how quickly it changes, because if you go back to, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, we could be saying the same thing about the Seattle Mariners. Mm-hmm. Oh, they have such a great system, their draft, look how many good drafts they've had, and They've signed some great international players, and you go on and on. And then you could say the same thing.
Well, just a few years ago, the Royals had like one of the best farm systems anyone had ever seen.
Royals.
And what has that turned into?
Oh yeah, look at Mike Moustakas, and you know these guys have never. And then you go further back. I mean, there was a point when the Phillies were considered the best run farm system in baseball. In like the early 80s, they were considered the gold standard of scouting.
And that's just amusing in hindsight.
In hindsight, yeah. Ruben was a scout at that time in the early 80s, and things changed so quickly, and people think, oh, they have this great system, and things change very quickly, and you have to credit the Yankees have been very good for 20 years, and most organizations cannot stay good for 5.
Yeah, and the payroll helps, but like as teams like the Mets have shown, that doesn't necessarily like mean that you'll automatically be good. You have to know what you're doing, too.
And you have to invest your money correctly, and you know there's so many things like more money, more problems. You know, you have to invest your money correctly, and you have to know. You know, you can be great at running a small bank, but if you can run a multi-billion-dollar investment corporation, that's also really difficult as well. So you know the stakes are sometimes even higher. So I credit Cashman, and he has a good relationship with the Steinbrenners generally, and he knows how to handle the type of market which a lot of GMs would not be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to handle big contracts, and it's a different type of general managing. If you're a general manager of the Astros, you may, you know, worry about structuring extensions and how to sign players on minor league deals and things like that. But you're not thinking about how should I value a player over the next 7 years who's a multi-million dollar player. That's a difficult task to do and to get done correctly.
Yep.
And to weigh the risks. And to also be able to scout them correctly as well, because scouting major league players is difficult as well. Because some guys fall off a cliff, and some guys may, you know, like, I credit Cashman for signings like, you know, like Nick Swisher.
They traded Wilson Bedemit to get Nick Swisher, which is just hilarious.
Yeah.
That's like the gold standard for Cashman moves.
Yeah, that and trading C.J. Henry to the Phillies for Bobby Abreu.
Bobby Abreu and Bartolo Colon and Freddie Garcia, things like that are like their major league scouting is really impressive, and that's a difficult thing to do to find, because they find, you know, their own market inefficiencies in their own way, because they're willing to take on risk of a guy who may cost $5 million, but they'll do it in such a way that really teams don't want to touch him. They use the market inefficiency of teams not wanting to pay salaries, and they'll maybe eat part of the salary but end up still making a surplus. So it's a different type of general managing. It's still difficult.
Yep. He's just very difficult to compare to his peers, because they don't have the same resources to work. And while, yes, it's nice to have more money, that doesn't necessarily mean that everything's going to be simplified.
And yeah, I mean, look at Theo Epstein. Like, he got himself into a real big jam in Boston, and he was dealing with the same payroll, but a similar type of payroll. And he got himself into a huge bind by offering way too much money all at the same time.
You, Carl Crawford. You, Adrian Gonzalez. You, Josh Beckett. You, John Lackey.
Really not good deals, a lot of them, especially Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett.
Mm.
And, you know, Cashman isn't afraid to let people walk as well. Yep. He's not at all afraid. And that's done him well, and I think that sometimes GMs can't, like, Theo Epstein couldn't handle a team like the Red Sox, where it was, like, so much money to handle. I don't think GM could possibly handle the Yankee GM roles, maybe David Dombrowski.
Yeah, possibly.
In the same type of light. But it's difficult to judge, and no one would really, and you wouldn't really know unless they were in that position, so.
Cashman's been getting the job done for quite some time, and, like, one, even if they missed the playoffs this year, two missed postseasons is not going to mean, oh, dismantle everything.
No, but it will, though.
Oh, okay. Never mind, then.
DFA, trade everyone.
DFA, Brian Cashman.
Yeah, actually, yeah. We're going to trade Brian Cashman to the Phillies. We need some Ruben in here. What's Jack Z doing?
It's rebuild. It should take, like, what, 3 years? It'll be fine.
Yeah, rebuild. It'll be that easy.
Rebuild. Quick turnaround, like the Royals.
Mm, yeah, they've been rebuilding since 1985.
Get a couple of top prospects, sign a few free agents, it'll be fine. Trade away your top prospect right fielder. It'll all work out.
Yep. I'm gonna look something up for a moment, because I think this will be an amusing factoid.
Well, while you do that, have you guys seen the Photoshop scouting report for Ruben Amaro Jr., where someone Photoshopped in the sentence, he would be a really shitty GM?
Well done.
See, the thing is what I've been reading about Ruben Amaro is he's actually a really good scout. He actually really knows his scouting material. Like, he can see physical tools really well, but that's it. That's the extent. That's fine if you're going to be a scout.
I've heard that about Omar Minaya too, because he actually made some pretty good international signings when he was with the Mets. I think like he was the one that helped, one of the ones who helped sign Jose Reyes and all those guys.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's the thing is that it's like they're scouts, but they're just not willing to adapt a little bit. But that doesn't mean they're not good at what they were originally doing, which was scouting. Because Ruben Amaro was like considered the best scout in the Phillies organization for like a very, very long time, and I believe he was their scouting director as well. So.
Yeah, there's a reason that he was like the assistant GM, I believe, under Pat Gillick when they won in 08, and it's not like that was a fluke.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, that's what people don't realize when they think about GMs, like, oh, they're just stupid. Like, no, it's like if you were to make a CEO, you know, a guy who was kind of just an accountant, like, he's going to know the money well, but he may not know the business. He may not know some other aspect of the business as well. So it's like sometimes they get their GM, and they're very baseball smart, but they may know only one side really, really well, and the rest they kind of have to delegate.
No, like I'll make fun of Ruben Amaro Jr., but he's still forgotten more about baseball than I'll ever know.
Yeah, yep.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I can mock his management style because that's clearly not good.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. It really has to do with, because the thing is, it's fine to not know certain things, but like, then you have to say, I don't know this, and I'm going to hire a bunch of people who do.
Right. Okay, yep. So I have my factoid about 1985 here. So the last time the Royals made the playoffs, a player was still in the major leagues who was born in the 30s.
Oh my god.
Phil Niekro.
Wow.
Knuckleballing. Yeah, and like there's still plenty of players from the 40s still playing when the Royals last made the playoffs, but and that's how long their rebuild was taken.
Wow.
And on that note, I think we can move on to the next session of the podcast, if that sounds good to you.
Yeah, sure.
Alright, so with World Cup going on, we were thinking about World Baseball Classic, how that's played every few years. And it has all these teams from around the world competing. And while, like, it's kind of silly, but it's still kind of fun. However, it just doesn't really capture, like, what a true World Cup in baseball would be like. Because, you know, not every country has the true best players from their country represented. Because, you know, because of crap like, you know, Mark Teixeira having his wrist pop in batting practice and spring training for Team USA. And they seem to still want to send their players. Which is understandable, but still would be. It made us think a little bit about what it would be like if there was a true World Baseball Classic, where basically anyone from the country was eligible to go on the team, and they just did, and it wasn't really a question. So we're going to do a draft. We're each going to take three countries that we would sort of make teams out of. Probably evenly. So one of us will go and then the other will go. So that makes sense?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
We'll have Matt F. go first since he's been the one who's closest to the actual World Cup action.
Yeah. I think the first pick is relatively easy. I'm taking the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I mean, I'm looking at a list and it's just ridiculous. I mean, this could be your infield of Beltre, Hanley, and Cano.
Can we get them? Yeah, there's a ton of talent in the Dominican Republic for a good 20 years now.
And if you don't want Hanley, you could have Jose Reyes or Gene Segura.
That's Not bad. All right. Matt P., you can have the next pick.
So you can't pick the United States, is that correct?
You can pick the United States.
All right, then I think that I'll take the United States as a fair number two. Let's see. In center field, you'd have Mike Trout. At short, you'd have Tulo.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you'd also have Josh Donaldson, Ian Kinsler, Paul Goldschmidt. Let's see what the pitching staff would be. Probably
Kershaw.
John Lester.
David Price.
David Price. Pretty much a lot of baseball players, since most baseball players are...
Are American.
Yeah, so...
Yep.
And I think as you go down the list, because you're going to start getting further down the list, it's just, yeah, you may only get, like one player from a certain... only a handful of players from a certain country, or maybe only one, like, excellent player.
Mm.
Yep.
Like, Korea just has Shin-Soo Choo. Like, that's it.
But he's more than enough.
That's what you need.
All right. With my pick, I'm going to go different way. I'm going to take Japan.
That's a good one.
Japan doesn't necessarily have a ton of Major League players right now, but obviously in the NPB, there's a bunch of talents. And while, you know, eventually, sometimes you'll get people among the league leaders who are, like, washouts in Major League Baseball, there's still a bunch of talent out there that I'm sure would put together a very competitive team. And, you know, just for the pitching staff, you'd have Tanaka and Darvish. I mean, Andy Wakuma.
Yeah.
That's not a bad front of three at all. Yeah, Kuroda.
That's a good back end. And you'd also have, you'd assume they'd also have Maeda. And, yeah.
And Uehara would be in the pen.
Oh, their starting rotation would be amazing. It would be still just as good as the American five-man rotation.
Yeah, and
it'd be pretty close.
Oh, yeah.
The kid I wrote about the other day, too. I forget his name. Shohei something.
Oh, Otani, yeah. Because Otani would be able to also hit.
Yeah, Shohei Otani. Yeah, he'd be a good find. He's only 19 years old.
Okay, so my next pick, I'm going to take Venezuela.
That's a solid one.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You got Miggy.
Felix.
Jose Altuve. Felix, yes.
Anibal Sanchez.
Sal Perez. Anibal.
Jesus Montero.
Alex Gonzalez.
There's your big guy.
Wilmer Flores.
Yeah, there's a lot of good talent in there. Oh, Sandoval, yeah. Too, right.
Felix DuBront. Oh, yeah. Henderson Alvarez, Elvis Ant.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
All right. Matt P., who's your next pick?
All right. I'm going to go with Cuba.
Ooh, I like that. That's good.
So yep. I get Alexi Ramirez, Yasiel Puig, Alexander Guerrero, Cespedes, Jose Abreu, and Aroldis Chapman.
Hmm.
That would be by far the most fun team.
And that doesn't even count the talents that are there and that haven't defected.
Yeah.
Or the guys that are in the process of defecting.
Yeah, so it's probably there's probably some other Cespedeses in there somewhere.
And you'll get Jose Iglesias' fractured shin, too.
I'll take it.
Or whatever it was.
And I'll take Jose Fernandez's left arm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Probably Fernandez. That makes me sad. Oh, you'd also get Diane
Viseno.
Stretch!
Diane? We'll also get Yasmani Grandal. I'll take him.
Yep. A respell Arruabarruena. However you pronounce.
Alright,
with my next pick, I should have clarified. We're counting Puerto Rico as separate from the United States in this, just because, you know, Puerto Rico plays separately against the United States in the WBC. So I think it's fair. I'll take Puerto Rico for that.
Nice.
Got Molina. Got both Molinas if I want. So maybe I'll want to keep away from Jose at this point. And still, Alex Rios, talented. Maybe I can have Carlos Beltran DH. But they're still, like, Puerto Rico's growing, coming back in terms of international talent. It went through a bit of a lull for a while where there wasn't really as much talent from Puerto Rico coming out. Sort of like between Carlos Beltran was one of the last of the really great Puerto Ricans for a while, and ever since then it was pretty much just like Yadier Molina and not much else. But in recent years with prospects, it's supposed to be getting a lot better. So I'll put my faith in Puerto Rico with my second pick. Okay. All right, you can make your third and final pick, Matt F.
Okay, well, I have a question. Are we counting like the WBC where like Curaçao counts as the Netherlands?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. Then I'm taking the Netherlands.
That's pretty good.
Yep. Profar, Andrelton.
Yeah.
Xander Bogaerts.
Yep, Xander Bogaerts.
Hmm.
Bring Andrew
Gregorius.
Jones back.
Oh, and Jonathan Scope.
Yeah. Kenley Jansen.
Yeah, Kenley Jansen's a good one.
Oh, Sheyron Martise. There's your clutch pick. I remember when he threw, like, the 7-inning no-hitter in the first WBC. Alright, Matt P., you can take your next pick.
Alright, so I'm gonna take Canada.
Good.
Because then I get Joey Votto, and Justin Morneau, and Russell Martin, and Brett Lowry. Oh, and Eric Bedard also.
Yep.
And Ryan Dempster.
Hey, Ryan Dempster's sitting out the year because he's showing solidarity with A-Rod.
Whenever I hear that phrase that Ryan Dempster's sitting out for the year, I literally just picture him, like, sitting on a couch eating potato chips.
I mean, probably. He's just doing his Harry Carey impression to no one.
Because when people say, I'm taking a year off, what are they doing? Are they working out? Are they going on vacation? I just see them, like, watching baseball on TV, just like, eating potato chips.
Well, if I was pitching here, I would be doing this.
Yep. Well, I think that's why Andy Pettit came back, because he saw that, like, I think that was the year he sat out was when Bartolo Colon and Freddy Garcia randomly had good years in the Yankees. Like, screw this, I can do this again. All right. With my last pick, I'm going to take Mexico. He's got Adrian Gonzalez, Jaime Garcia, when Jaime Garcia is good. Sergio Romo's good back of the pen, Giovanni Gallardo, and there's a bunch of other Mexican League talent.
Yeah.
Again, that's just not really being used at the moment.
I thought about them, but it's a really big drop-off.
It is
yeah.
a big drop-off, but there's, at this point, there aren't too many other teams.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't pick Korea.
We'll see, like...
You get Chu and Ryu.
Yeah, but that's not really much. I trust the Mexican League talent a bit more than the Korean League talent.
I just question the level of talent in the Mexican League. Like,
well, I think the level of talent in the Mexican League is higher than the level of talent in the Korean League. I'm not positive
definitely.
About that, but I'm, yeah.
Yeah, because what is it? Who's hitting, 40 home runs? Is it Ruben Rivera or something?
Yes.
Is hitting, 40 home runs in the Mexican League?
Yeah.
I was going through Mexican League stats today, and I found someone named Luis Suarez, who has never played a single minor league or major league game, who is has a career OPS over 800 in the Mexican League.
Well then.
That makes sense.
Yeah, this is the Mexican League, where Jorge Vazquez has hit 221 home runs.
El Chato.
Memories. But yeah, there's some talent in Mexican League that I think could be useful international play, so go with that. Yeah, Ruben Rivera, age 40, 17 home runs in 67 games. Also in the Mexican League right now, Angel Barroa, hitting .335, .391, .611, with 18 homers. But, yeah. Also, Russell Branyan's there. What?
Yeah, I was going to say Russell Branyan.
Nice. Hitting dingers?
He's got 8.
Not bad.
Also, Willy Taveras. I'm discovering all these players that were like, oh yeah, they're UN. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. So, to recap, my team of countries is Japan, Mexico, and Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And what are yours?
Mine is the United States, Canada, and I'm trying to think what the other one was. And Cuba.
Yep,
Geronimo Dillo is slugging 815 in the Mexican League. Sorry, no, OPS. OPS. Ah. But still. Okay, wait. My team is the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, and the Netherlands.
Pretty solid Latin team. Including, yes. Like, Netherlands, Curacao. Yeah. So, that's, that would be an ideal World Cup thing. That'd be nice. But
yeah, it'd be fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think my trio would win. I think one of your trios.
Yep. I think honestly,
it's a big
it
step off
from close.
United States to Dominican Republic too.
Yeah, I feel like it would be like my team and Matt F's team would be pretty close. Like they'd be pretty much neck and neck with each other.
Then again, Japan has won two World Baseball Classics, and that's that doesn't like, tell you everything.
That's because like. The United States just doesn't want to play. Because yeah. The thing is, that's like Japan's chance to show themselves. Because it's funny that whenever scouts talk about international scouting, like public scouts or playing like for blogs and things like that, they're always like, oh yeah, when I saw them pitch at the World Baseball Classic. Like that's pretty much a showcase. It's like the PG International.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Matt F's team would win just because they can have Archimedes Caminero. And Jordani Valdespin. Where did you get hit? I was hit in my penis.
Well, Matt P's team has a Uni Betancourt, so...
Oh, never mind.
And I have also a Res Bull Arboreno.
Oh, man.
But you do have Lurie.
Larry Garcia, he's a great pitcher.
And Eduardo Nunez.
Oh god, there's the Hector Nuesi.
And don't forget, in case you need, this is actually you have the best weapon, you have Miguel Olivo.
Unleash the Olivo. Him and Suarez.
Ears.
Him, Suarez, and Tyson. Just what the anyway, that's our World Cup section. Now Matt P had another section based on the Old Timers Day festivities that occurred last weekend. So, take it away.
Sure. So, it was really fun watching the Old Timers game and Old Timers Day, and we were talking about how great these players were and they going over all their achievements, and I thought it would be even better and funnier to go over the players that were horrible, that were the opposite of Old Timers Day. And to just assemble a group of players that were just the worst players ever in Yankee history. Because I feel like that'd be even more fun to watch them play than to watch, like, you know, Paul O'Neill and David Cohn. Like, that's fun, but I want to watch really bad players. So I'm going to go through a group of stats. Hitting and some batting stats. And like, one section for fielding stats. But, you guys can guess if you want as to who is the worst, but some of them are really kind of out there. So first I'm going to go through the worst pitching season in terms of negative F4. I don't know if you guys would know who would even be close. In terms of modern pitchers, Chad Godin in 48 innings had a negative 0.8 war. That's the worst modern. And then Scott Proctor in 2011... had a negative 0.7.
Yeah,
those were the worst.
Poor Scott Proctor.
And then Aaron Small in 2006, negative 0.6. So those were the worst modern, but old. You had Fred Talbot had negative 1.4. He pitched 138 innings, mm-hmm. and he had an ERA of 4.22 and 4.7 FIP. And this is in 1967, when people had ERAs of like 1. So, very, very, very bad. Then it was rounded up by Dooley Womack in 1968 with negative 1, and Bill Stafford in 1963 with negative 1. Then, this one's funny. The players who led the Yankees with the highest single-season walk rate. And, funny enough, the three out of the top walk rate leaders are Tommy Byrne.
Oh, he walked in
1940, 1949, 1950, 50 in 1949 in 196 innings. Tommy Byrne walked 8.22 per nine.
Oh my God.
That's like 2012 Dellen at like the big league level.
He had 1949, he had 179 walks in 196 innings.
That's how you
Jesus. That is ridiculous.
Insane. Like, that is a guy I want to see in the old-timers game.
Yep.
Just completely not able to throw straight. Okay, so that's one of them. The next one is the highest home runs per nine. So, some of them are modern, and I'm sure you can guess a couple of them. Who do you think is up there in recent memory?
Phil Hughes.
Phil Hughes is number five.
Wait, what is this in ranking?
Fifth highest home run per nine in a single season.
I would imagine, I don't know if Nuno counts yet, but he'd probably be up there.
I made minimum 100 innings, because then you'd have some ridiculous...
I feel like AJ Burnett gave up a lot of homers, too.
Yeah, he's up there. He's 17th all-time.
Hmm.
1.47 home runs per nine. The top five was Dennis Rasmussen in 1987. He pitched 146 innings and had 1.91 home runs per nine.
Nice. Well, I know the record for most homers given up in a season is Ralph Terry, so he's probably in there.
Well, he's up there. He's number eight. He had 1.57 home runs per nine and 115 innings. Number two is our old buddy Javier Vasquez. He allowed 1.83 home runs per nine in 157 innings.
That was 2010.
Yep.
When he had the dead arm.
Yes.
And Russell Branyan destroyed that one.
And then Catfish Hunter in 1977.
Oh yeah.
1.82 home runs per nine in 143 innings. Terry Mulholland in 1994 in 120 innings. He was a little more limited. And then Phil Hughes in 2012.
Of course.
So Ralph Terry's eighth, and then El Duque is ninth. Carl Pavano is 10th. So fun list there. Then the next one is this is probably my favorite one, is the worst single season war of any Yankee in history, minimum zero plate appearances from 1920 to the present. And both of them come in the same season, the top two.
And one of them has to be Tony Womack, right?
One of them is Tony Womack. Absolutely. He had a negative 2.3 war, 47 WRC plus. He had a batting line of 249, 276, 280. He had zero home runs and 15 RBIs in 108 games.
Yeah, some people are comparing Brian Roberts to Tony Womack, but, I mean, while Roberts is not great, he is not that bad. Jeez.
That was bad. And it's funny because the 2005 team was still pretty good. And then they have the other worst Yankee season ever, Bernie Williams.
Yeah, Bernie, yeah.
Negative 2 as well. He had an 85 WRC+, but his defense was terrible. And by terrible, I mean horrible. It was negative 30 runs below average, or, you know, negative 30, which is ranked as the second worst Yankee defensive season in history.
Yeah, I remember the 2005 Yankees were one of... I think in the baseball prospectus for the year after that, they were like... They were a marvel because they were just the worst defensive team in history, and they still won the division title because that was how good they could hit. But
oh, yeah, they had Gary Sheffield as well, who was also terrible...
Oh, yeah, Matsui wasn't great, Jeter wasn't great, A-Rod, I think, was okay, Cano was a rookie and he wasn't great, Posada was not really a great catcher either,
so yeah,
Giambi at first, I think. So.
Okay, and then Lou Piniella was also in there a little bit, Pee Wee Waninger, 1925, -2.
Good old Pee Wee.
Yep. So now that leads me to my next stat, which is the league is the, I guess, leaders single season lowest WRC plus in Yankee history. And again, both of them are led, the first two, the same player. Jim Mason in 1975 and 76. I used minimum 200 plate appearances, so it was like legit amount of playing time. And in 251 and 256 plate appearances, he had a 27 and 28 WRC+.
Fierce.
Two seasons of like a half a season he played. And his batting line in 1975 was 152, 228, 211. His slugging percentage was lower than his on-base percentage.
And the Blue Jays were so impressed that they drafted him in the expansion draft right afterward. Like, you know who we need? That guy.
And number three, also in 1975, Lou Piniella had a cool 38 WRC+, batted 196, 262, 226.
Yikes.
I was inspired by that because Jose Molina, former Yankee, in about 100 and change plate appearances, has a 8 WRC+.
Well, at least he had that one extra base hit the other day, because probably before that it was, like, negative.
He had one extra base hit. He has two RBIs in 43 games. Okay, so now the next, I have two left. One of them is walk percentage, minimum 200 plate appearances. Number one is Oscar Azacar. He played in 1990. He had 218 plate appearances for the 1990 Yankees, and this is when the Yankees had a terrible offense. And
that was when they were so bad that they got Brian Taylor, because they were the number one overall pick the next year.
And in 65 games and 214 at-bats, Oscar Azacar had two walks.
Ooh.
Two walks.
Wow. Peter O'Brien is like Babe Ruth and Barry Bonds compared to that.
Well, a couple of them are interesting. The next one's Mel Hall, who was not good. But
and an asshole to Bernie Williams, and also a pedophile.
There's that.
Looking up, Mel Hall is in year 5 of a 45-year prison sentence.
Oh my.
It's the longest contract he would ever be signed to.
Probably.
But then the following two are... the next one is very interesting. Number 3 all-time is Mickey Rivers in 1976, who put up a 5.5 WAR season, but only walked 2% of the time. Which is pretty astonishing. He batted 312, 327, 432. And in that season, he had 13 walks in 613 plate appearances. The last category is actually in the inside edge era, so this is just using inside edge fielding data, which is pretty recent. And this has to do with the lowest percentage of routine plays made. And this is just probably the past few years. And I'm not counting, like, players who just didn't play. Like, Rafael Soriano had four attempts or something. The worst is there are two. One of them's funny, and one of them's even funnier. The first one is Brendan Ryan, who in 21 attempts... in 21 attempts, and this is this season... He's had 21 routine plays, and he's only made 85.7% of them. And this is plays that are supposed to be made 90 to 100% of the time.
Whoops.
But he made the other plays, the plays that were like 40 to 60 and 60 to 90. The next one is 2012 Eduardo Nunez, who has two weird ones. In 2012, he had 51 innings at third base, and he also had 25 innings in left field.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're he could be an outfielder because he hits enough there.
Yeah. So he had 17 plays at third base. He made 88.2% of them. He had 9 plays in left field. He made 88.9% of them. And then it's rounded out by Luis Cruz, who made 89.5% of routine plays in his 41 innings. At shortstop. But I'm sure there are other funny ones. But I'm sure there'd be other funny ones, but the sample's just too small with that one because this is just so recent.
Yeah, when you said they were really funny, I was kind of hoping Chris Stewart was going to be one of them.
I wish, but it's just like, I feel like routine plays for a catcher are like literally right in front of you. Because most of them, for routine plays, they're, like, way above 90%. Some of them are, like, exactly, like, Robinson Cano in, like, 9,000 innings, it's, like, 99%.
Bob.
Miss that guy.
Raul Labanez, who's terrible defensively, in, like, 651 innings, 100% in routine plays. So
those are the ones you have to die for unnecessarily. Yeah.
And Jason Nix as well, 100%.
Gold glove.
Chris Stewart actually is here. In 2012, 395.1 innings, 100% routine. He didn't, because it doesn't really have him, and he plays for him.
Yeah. I guess they would be all probably like pop-ups, right?
Yeah, probably most of them. I would have to look, because sometimes they have videos attached. But yeah, it's usually like just a radius around them, so it would probably just be a pop-up behind home plate. Which, if you can't catch, you shouldn't be playing.
Yep.
But that's my bad timers day.
they can all convene at in Carl Pavano's backyard. Of a softball game. And Eduardo Nunez will get hurt.
Speaking of poor hitting Yankees catchers, in 2005 John Flaherty's WRC plus was 17.
Here.
Flash.
Alright, so I'll do it for our segments, and now we can move on to the tweet bag. Tweet bag's not very big this week, so just get right into it. There are just two questions. So, first question in the tweet bag from longtime listener. How many games this year will Derek Jeter bat anywhere other than second in the order?
Is zero an answer? Is zero the correct answer?
I think he might have a few where he's batting leadoff for some reason.
Yeah.
Just if, like...
I was gonna say five.
Yeah, I would probably guess, I'll guess eight. It might be a bit high.
Eight?
Whatever. Do you want to guess zero, Matt B?
I'm gonna take the... I mean, I don't know if it'll be zero, but I'm gonna take the under.
Yeah.
You know? Say, like, if it's one game. Because I could just imagine, like... You know, how the New York media is, that one day he's, like, put lead off, or that one day he's put down in the order, like, everyone's going to flip out.
Yeah, well, and no one will flip out if he's batting lead off, just if he's batting outside of one or two.
But if he's out batting outside of one or two, there's going to be, like, a press conference, and, like,
explain, you know,
they're going to bring in, like, the president, and they're going to have to explain what has happened, and there's going to be, like, a hearing, and...
And then that'll be the day he goes, like, 3-for-4.
And then it'll just be further fueled. Like, see, Girardi needs to be fired.
And then Jeter gets just bumped up to the batting order the next day. And then he goes,
yeah, exactly.
0-for-4.
And then he
double plays.
0-for-2 with two sacrifice bunts.
Yep.
And a botched bunt, too.
Yeah. People seem to forget that. That when Derek Jeter bunts, sometimes it's not successful. It doesn't always move the runner over.
Yeah, I mean, he is a good bunter. Not that he really should be bunting, but he's a good bunter, and even he will sometimes, like, pop it up. So, you know.
Yep.
Well, ranting about bunting is the topic for another day. Now, the other question from Travis Lincoln. How far do Mason Williams and Slade Heathcott fall in top prospect lists? Who gets added to those lists?
I'm going to say both of them are not on the list at all.
I could see them both still making some just because, you know, tools and stuff. And I was talking about this with Tanya earlier. I think I might include, I don't think I'd include Slade at this point since he's 24, almost, I think he's 24 or almost 24 and is now injured again. But I think I might still barely include Mason Williams in a top 10.
I wouldn't. Oh, you mean Yankee top 10?
Yeah, Yankee.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, at this point, I don't see Mason Williams or Slade Heathcott even sniffing at an overall top 100 prospects list, I don't think.
No.
I think Gary Sanchez will be lucky to be in the back half of the back half.
Yeah, I mean, he could make an appearance on the top 50, the Baseball Prospectus top 50, but I would doubt it. If he is, he's like 50.
Yeah. I could see Aaron Judge jumping to these lists, because now he's like, yeah. He's been in the, obviously didn't play last year, but now he was drafted in 2013, and now you're going to start seeing a lot of these 2013 draftees start filtering into these prospect lists. And Judge is a really good player, and he's just seemed to hit. He crushed Charleston, and he's doing pretty well in his start in Tampa too. So I could see him very high on Yankee prospect lists, and maybe even regular prospect lists.
I think at this point you could say he's higher than Jagielo. Jagielo's stock is kind of falling, yeah. And people are kind of saying, oh, his ceiling is kind of just a regular third baseman. And Judge, it's like, oh, his ceiling is like he could be a 35 home run hitter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he could. And I think the other one is Severino, is he's going to get onto top 100 list.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
He's yep.
Like, people have been saying that. People have been saying that even last year, that his tools were just, like, electric. But the only thing is that he was kind of just raw. He was a very wiry arm. He had the velocity, but he just didn't have the. He wasn't refined. But now he kind of is more refined, and he could finish in Double A by the end of the season. So,
and he's only 20.
Yeah, and he's only 20, and yeah, he's one of the more exciting. I think he's the most exciting prospect in the Yankee farm system, to be honest. Him and Judge.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, and yep. He's probably top pitching prospect right now, I would think.
Absolutely.
But, you know, Zach Neuding.
Yeah.
But sure. I'm sure Ref Snyder would appear in, like, a top 100 prospects list. But I know Josh Norris at Baseball America has already said that he would put Ref Snyder in a top 10 Yankees prospect list now. So,
absolutely, at this point, yeah.
Same with Pete O'Brien.
He kind of forced his way onto those lists just by playing well, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't ignore him. Even if he's not toolsy, yep. he just played well.
Okay. So, that'll do it for the tweet bag. So, now we can close out the podcast with a jump back to the Major League team and the Yankee/Mitre of the Week. Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
My Yankee of the Week is going to Rocky Kuroda.
Yeah, can buy that.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been good the past week. I mean, there's not, like, a ton of choices, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's heroic. Ain't no joke. He's fine. All right, Matt P., your yep. Yankee of the Week.
I have to say mine is Brett Gardner.
He's on fire.
Because he's on fire, and like it's pretty unbelievable that he's been like him and Tanaka have been the best players on the team.
Yeah, he's
outplaying Ellsbury. He's playing better than Ellsbury, pretty much at Ellsbury's game. Here's my only thing about Gardner that I think is interesting. So, Ellsbury's defensive stats have kind of been saying he's been down, and Gardner's have been saying he's up. I'm really wondering how much Gardner extending into the range of Ellsbury and sort of taking away opportunities that he would have had.
It's possible.
But I kind of look at their defense together, but even to be honest, people were writing Gardner off about poor man's Ellsbury and like he hasn't hit at all and blah blah blah. So he's been like just as patient, more power, more range in the outfield, and definitely more consistent. He hasn't really been streaky at all.
I wonder if some of Ellsbury's score is deterred by the fact that, you know, he doesn't have to go far into the left field range because Gardner is able to cover so much of the ground there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It could be. That's why I kind of look at their defensive stats together.
Yeah. I wouldn't look at it too much.
Yeah, it's still a small sample, and I mean, it just says, I think together their range is really good.
Yep. All right.
So.
Sounds good. So, my Yankee of the Week will be Jacoby Ellsbury. He's been hitting pretty well. You know, we were just talking about him.
Yep.
But, to get a whole bunch of hits getting on base. And I'll have to give an honorary mention to Mark Teixeira, because he's hit a few home runs the past week, too. But my Yankee of the Week will be Jacoby Ellsbury. He's hitting 385, 452, 423 in the past week. So that's doing work. More of that.
Fun fact. The leader in the past week in the ADs and WRC Plus is Brian Roberts.
Yeah. Hmm. How'd that happen?
I don't know.
Well, then he can have an honorary Yankee of the Week, too. But
yeah, you know, yeah. You deserve it.
318, 375, 545. That's, hey, if you want to keep doing that and give us a reason to say, okay, maybe Russ Snyder could take a little bit more time, then fine, go ahead. But
yep.
Do you think that he has that on his mind, that he's breathing on his neck?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not.
Because he's pretty close to losing his job.
It's possible. Maybe Girardi had like a closed door meeting with him. And he's like, look, stop sucking.
Stop sucking, or Ref Snyder's going to come through that door and steal your jersey.
We'll assign him number 14, too. They're just ruthless.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. I mean, he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's 7th in WRC Plus on the team, which isn't great, but
that, I think that kind of speaks to how disappointing a lot of the team has been, especially Brian McCann.
Yeah, but he's starting to creep up there, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. All right, V-Tray of the Week, Matt F.
Good old Nuno. His home run for fly ball is not 100% this week, but it is an impressive 23%.
That's how you do it. And of course, he got blown out in the start.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it should be called the Nuno of the Week.
I don't know what.
We're getting close, yeah.
This team is in bad luck with tildes. Nuno and Nunez. Alright, Matt P., your Mitre of the Week.
This is tough. I guess I would say Chase Whitley.
Yeah, really
pounded.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of those hits weren't necessarily well struck, but, you know, he was still giving up all his hits, and then gave the big home run that didn't help, so.
Yeah.
Hopefully he can figure himself out, and he's not suffering some Solarte-type regression.
Yeah, it would suck.
Solarte has been slumping pretty badly, too. He just recently snapped his 0 for 27 or something like that, but he's still hitting dreadfully. So,
yeah.
But my Mitre of the Week is actually not going to go to Solarte. It's going to go to Brian McCann, who I just mentioned, because he's been doing nothing.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
It's really disappointing, because he's, like, not hitting that much better than Chris Stewart is. And it's like, you're supposed to be, like, a great pitch framer, and he's doing that, and great on catcher defense, but he's not doing anything with the bat.
Yep. I mean, again, he's gonna break out of it eventually. I really do think he will.
I think so too. Yeah. It's just extremely frustrating.
It's just like when, like you're thinking, like, is it like every time he gets a hit, like, oh, is he breaking out of it now? Is he breaking out of it now? And like, he's going to. It's just gonna take like a little time.
Yeah, McCann has a 76 WRC plus, and Stewart has a 69 WRC plus. So he's creeping up there.
Oh.
You look at yourself, Brian McCann.
he looks in the mirror and he just sees Chris Stewart.
Ah.
He starts drinking sand and he has no idea why.
He's like, I don't know what's scandaling me. Okay, so I think that'll do it for the Pinstripe Valley podcast, unless any of you guys have anything else?
No.
Okay, so you can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Valley. You can follow our Twitter GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. You can follow me at Mearns, PSA, M-E-A-R-N-S, PSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. Follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MPro6294. And like us on Facebook. We're posting some good stuff on the page, and we'll always be good to see you, your listeners on here. And please rate and review us on iTunes. I'll boost our awareness to the iTunes community, etc., etc. And it would be good to hear some feedback, because I don't think we've gotten too much recently. But anything you have to say would be great. Oh yeah, and if you ever have any tweet bag questions, post them on the site when I put the fan shot up, or just tweet at us at Pinstripe Alley. So, from Matt Provenzano, Matt Franchik, I'm Andrew Mearns. Have a good night.